Welcome to another message from Life Point Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center, Kansas. For more information on Life Point Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. It is our prayer to invest in generations to influence community. And now, today's message.
I was hoping that the Packers would win last night. Well, they didn't. And of course, you know, our family's team is the Broncos, and they weren't even close to making it. So maybe I should go for the Chiefs so that they don't make it. Oh, I set y'all up for that one. You guys fell hard for that. Man, that worked way better than I thought it was. That one was for you, Dad. Well, good morning. As I mentioned earlier, my parents both have COVID. They're doing okay. They just have kind of a little cough and a little sore throat. But for the most part, they're good. They'll be back at it this week. So, you know, he'll be back next week. But they're watching online. And on Tuesday, I was at work, and my dad calls me, and he goes, "Hey, I just tested positive for COVID. Can you preach on Sunday?" And I was like, "You've got to be kidding me," because it's kind of a lot of work to create a message really fast. But full disclosure, I have done this message before, but I've never done it here. So I think, and I've actually been wanting to do it for a while here, so it just kind of all worked out. But yeah, so I'm also the life group pastor here at church. So if you are interested in signing up for a group, we'll be doing that in the next 2 weeks. And if you want to host a group, please get in touch with me. We can always use more life groups because that's where discipleship happens. That's where true community happens. And so we want to make sure that you're involved with that if you're not already. Before I get into this, I just want to share a little bit about myself. So I went to school, undergrad, graduate school at Southwestern Assembly of God University in Waxahachie, Texas. Yes, it's a mouthful. Anytime I meet somebody new, anytime I have applied for a job, it's like, they're like, "Where'd you go to school?" I'm like, "A small Christian school in Texas." They're like, "I think I know what you're talking about." I guarantee you don't, because there's like a million of those things down there. So it's always a mouthful. But so I went there for school and really had a great experience, met some great friends. And we were fairly known to partake in some, you know, reckless activities, which, before you judge me, you know that you were probably way crazier than me when you were my age. So, you know, don't judge me. But, like, one time I actually didn't get him to do this. I tried to prevent him from doing this, but one of my friends, he rode a bull one time. One time we went exploring in the tunnels of Waxahachie, and we got lost and came up out of a manhole in somebody's backyard. Like, we did some pretty dumb stuff. And then, you know, I worked for the city in the public works for here in Valley Center. And so I realized how stupid that was when I worked there for a little bit. But we did some pretty reckless stuff. And there was this one time, it was like at the end of the semester, and I was with my friend Josh and Christian. They're both youth pastors now. One's youth pastor in Texas, one's youth pastor in Mississippi. Great guys. But we went to this wedding shower. Some of our friends were getting married, and they wanted to do like a wedding shower with their college friends. So we went to this barn on top of this hill in Texas, and they were having this wedding shower. I mean, it was fun. There was music and games and food and all the good stuff. Well, the storm started blowing up. I mean, the wind was going pretty strong. Started raining super hard, and then hail started, right? And I'm like, this looks a little sketchy. So I like go outside, and I'm looking at the clouds, and I'm starting to see, you know, swirling. And, you know, us being from Kansas, we kind of know like what bad weather really looks like, right? We know when to take it seriously and when to just like look up and like, "Oh, that's cool." No, this was one of those times where it was like, "Guys, we're gonna die." And so I was like trying to tell people, like, "Guys, I think we need to find cover." There was like nowhere to hide. I mean, we're in a metal building on top of a hill with nothing else around. I'm like, we need to get out of here or something. And they're like, no, we're just going to turn up the music louder. It'll be all right. So they turn up the music louder, and fortunately, we got out of that situation safely. But after the fact, we found out that a tornado had actually touched down like 2 miles away from us. So I'm like, well, by the grace of God, we survived that. And you would think that we would learn our lesson, right? No, no. The same group of guys, we decide, hey, let's go to Fort Worth. It's like an hour away. There's cool stuff to do there, you know, the Sundance Square and the stockyards and everything. And let's just go check it out. Well, on the way there, it was raining so hard. Like, to this day, I have not experienced rainfall that was this hard. Like, my windshield wipers were going full speed. Wasn't doing anything. Of course, I probably needed new windshield wipers because I was a poor college student. But that's not the fact. The fact is that it was bad. So we pulled off the road like responsible adults and went to In-N-Out Burgers, got some burgers and fries and a milkshake, and then we got back on the road to Fort Worth, at which point the storm had picked up even harder. So we were really smart. You know, we're really educated college kids. And we're driving along. Finally, the rain, like, lets up. But the thing about Texas or in the Dallas-Fort Worth area is that when it rains hard, it floods under the overpasses. I didn't know that. Josh didn't know that. He's from Colorado. Christian didn't know that. He's from Mississippi. So we're, like, flying down the road because in Texas, you go fast, right? You don't go below, like, 75 miles an hour on the interstate. And if you are going below that, you're going to die. So we were going because we were late, right? And all of a sudden, there's, like, 3 cars in front of us that disappear in a, like, puddle of water. But it's not just a puddle. It's like a lake in the middle of the interstate. And I'm like, oh, Lord. So I try and slow down as fast as I can because I know what's about to happen. And I get down to like 45, 50 miles an hour. I hit this puddle of water. That's really like a lake. And I can't see anything. It was like Moses had split the Red Sea. There was water everywhere. There's 2 cars right next to me. I start going sideways like this. And I mean, we're inches from slamming into the car to the left. Somehow I was able to correct out of that and like hit the pavement without, you know, destroying my $2,000 college kid car. And we got out of it and we were going straight. And we all just sat there for like 30 seconds in dead silence. I mean, like, I turned the music off in the car. I sat there with both hands on the wheel like a good boy. And we did not say anything for like 5 miles. And then all of a sudden, we all look at each other. And we were like, yeah! We just survived. We are living life tonight. It was wild. It was wild. And but you know what? That was like one of the most uncertain moments to that point in my life. That was like one of the most scary, like uncertain moments of my life because I'm like, if I don't correct out of this fishtail, I'm going to kill myself and my 2 friends and maybe other people around us. And thank God we didn't. But you know what? Life is full of uncertainty, right? We all know that. We've been living the last couple of years, and especially this current day of age, we're uncertain about the trajectory of our nation. We're uncertain about our finances, uncertain about our families, uncertain about our futures. And especially because a lot of this uncertainty it can be self-inflicted sometimes, and sometimes it can be imposed upon us. We make mistakes. Our politicians are ridiculous. Life is full of uncertainty. And here's where I want to go with this idea of uncertainty today. When the impending calamity seems overpowering and overcoming, we must remember that God's plans and purposes are greater than our uncertain circumstances. And that's our main idea for today. That'll be up on the screen. God's plans and purposes are greater than our uncertain circumstances. And this week's life verse, and this has really been my life verse for the last like 2.5 years. during the whole pandemic thing, during all of the social unrest and political madness and just everything that we've endured the last couple of years, it has been John 16:33. I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, for I have overcome the world. That was Jesus' words. He never says that we're not going to have uncertainty. He never says that we're not going to have hardship. In fact, the days can be dark. But he says, take heart, for I have overcome the world. And today, I want to talk about the minor prophet Habakkuk. And you're probably like, who is that? Or you're like, I've never heard a message on Habakkuk. This could be interesting. Well, the first time I gave this message was out in Colorado, and we were doing a series on the minor prophets. And my pastor was like, hey, I want you to preach on Habakkuk. And I'm like, do you hate me? You know, like, I'm 23. I've never preached at this church before. And he's like, hey, I want you to do this. I'm like, okay, here we go. It's actually been one of the most valuable things I've ever done. But this message, or the book of Habakkuk is actually extremely relevant to where we find ourselves in our current state of affairs. And the primary theme of this book is the fact that in the midst of uncertainty, Habakkuk, he chose to trust God's plans and purposes. He chose to trust that they were greater than his current circumstances. And whenever you're studying the minor prophets, learning about the name and what the name of the minor prophet means is pretty important in understanding the book, like everything that goes on in the book, because sometimes it can be kind of confusing and there's a lot of like metaphors and all kinds of symbolism that happens. And so it's just helpful to know what the name of the prophet means. So Habakkuk means embracer, love for God and wrestling with God. That's what the name Habakkuk means. And we'll kind of dig into what that looks like. We'll kind of unveil that. But the book of Habakkuk is the only time in the Bible that his name is mentioned. It's only three chapters. It's very short. You could read it in about 10 minutes. Five if you're smarter than me. No, I'm just kidding. That was a stupid thing to say. I'm sorry. But we don't know much about, because of that, we don't know much about the events that are happening, really. But Habakkuk addresses some of these things right off the back. Like, there's not a lot of outside context. It's just what's in the story. So he addresses this right off the bat. What we do know is that the nation of Israel is split up into two kingdoms, the north and the south. You've got, like, Israel in the north, and you've got Judah in the south. And at the time, Judah had fallen into some pretty dark practices. They were doing just horrendous acts of violence, social injustice, and Habakkuk, being a prophet from the Lord, went to God and pleaded with him to bring down judgment on Israel, Judah, to punish them for their wrongdoings and to bring them back into alignment with God's word. Later in chapter 1, God responds to Habakkuk. He responds to his prayer by saying that he is raising up the Babylonians to wreak havoc on Judah, to judge the Judeans for their horrendous sins and bring punishment for their actions. And when Habakkuk heard this, he was distraught. He wasn't asking, like, for the nation of Israel to be conquered. He was just asking for him, you know, to set him straight. And God comes back and he's like, no, I'm going to send somebody to conquer you, and you're going to live in oppression for hundreds of years. And so that's kind of scary, right? And basically all of chapter 2 is Habakkuk wrestling with God over sparing Judah from this attack, sparing Judah from this incoming oppression. And he wasn't, you know, just like, hey, God, I think we should just talk about this. You know, I think we should just chill out for a sec. Let's just reevaluate. And we'll, you know, maybe we can compromise. No, he was like fervently, adamantly, persistently, almost angrily calling out to God to prevent this judgment from coming to pass. And so this is really where the meaning of his name comes in. He wrestled with God, right? He embraced God, and he wrestled with him to the point of almost being angry. And when we get to chapter 3, which is where we'll actually read some of the text, we see Habakkuk have an impressive change of heart. He knew that there was nothing in his power that he could do to change God's mind in this specific situation. So he had a choice to make. He could either look at this impending situation and be bitter and angry and hopeless, or he can look at the past examples of God's faithfulness and choose to trust God's plans and purposes in the midst of the uncertainty. Even though he doesn't understand God's methods, he chooses to embrace God's plan wholeheartedly. And so we see this in chapter 3, and he actually, it's kind of like in a song format. But there's three things that we can take away from this story, and specifically chapter 3. And the first one is this, is that if God has done it before, he can do it again. We see this in verse 1 through 15, which, you know, we kind of hear that a lot, right? Like, there's a song, there's like an elevation worship song about it, but it's true. And maybe you're thinking, I've literally never experienced God do anything for me. Well, first off, I would challenge and maybe, you know, rethink that a little bit, but also that may be true in your life. But just because something hasn't happened to you specifically doesn't mean that there's not a hint, like a bunch of people in this very room that have experienced the miraculous power and authority of Jesus in their life. And so you can take and you can draw hope from someone else's God moment and apply that to your life. And if he can do it for them, then he can do it for you. So let's get into this. Verse 1, a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet on Shigionoth. Lord, I have heard your name, or I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds. Lord, repeat them in our day, in our time, make them known. In wrath, remember mercy. God came from Timon, the Holy One, from Mount Paran. His glory covered the heavens, and his praise filled the earth. His splendor was like the sunrise. Rays flashed from his hand, where his power was hidden. Plague went before him, pestilence followed his steps. He stood and shook the earth. This is chapter 3, by the way, and I didn't put it on the screen because it's kind of a lot. But if you've got your Bibles, please be following along. Plague went before him. Pestilence followed his steps. He stood and shook the earth. He looked and made the nations tremble. The ancient mountains crumbled and the age-old hills collapsed. But he marches on forever. I saw the tents of Cushan in distress, the dwellings of Midian in anguish. Were you angry with the rivers, Lord? Was your wrath against the streams? Did you rage against the sea when you rode your horses and your chariots to victory? You uncovered your bow. You called for many arrows. You split the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and writhed. Torrents of water swept by. The deep roared and lifted its waves on high. Sun and moon stood still in the heavens at the glint of your flying arrows, at the lightning of your flashing spear. In wrath, you strode through the earth, and in anger, you threshed the nations. You came out to deliver your people, to save your anointed one. You crushed the leader of the land of wickedness. You stripped him from head to foot. With his own spear, you pierced his head when his warriors stormed out to scatter us, gloating as though about to devour the wretched who were in hiding. You trampled the sea with your horses, churning the great waters. Now, there's kind of a lot going on in there, right? In this chapter, again, it's a song written by Habakkuk about Judah's current situation. And in the first section, he's really recalling God's past ways that he has redeemed the nation of Israel in the past. How he struck down its enemies, how he pushed the nation to victory, how he sent his protection, his anointing, his deliverance to the people in the past. Why is he doing this? Because he knows that it's in God's nature, his hesed, which means his loving kindness, to bring redemption to his people. And I think it's so interesting that in this incredibly dark time, Habakkuk, he's choosing to speak the Lord's majesty and power. Even when the odds are stacked against them. Even when it's coming like a tsunami wave. He's choosing to trust. He's choosing to put his faith in the Lord. And he knows that if God could deliver the people of Israel from their uncertainty in the past, that he can do the same in today, at that time. So my question for you this morning is, how has God proven himself before so that you can have faith in your present situation? How has God shown up in your finances, or maybe your relationships, or that job situation, or a breakthrough with your kids? If he could do it then, he can do it again. And again, if you're in that situation, you're like, I don't really know if God's ever done anything for me. Get around some people who have experienced that. Join a small group. That's a shameless plug. I'm, you know, small life group pastor, but shameless plug there. But it's true, because that's where we can foster real Christian community, where we can learn from each other, where we can be encouraged by one another. When one person is on a mountaintop, we can celebrate. When one person is in the valley, we can encourage. And that's what we can do. That's one way that we can do this. And if he can help somebody else, he can help you. The next principle that we can take away from Habakkuk is to wait patiently to experience God's redemptive love. In verses 16 through 18, it says, I heard, and my heart pounded, my lips quivered at the sound. Decay crept into my bones, and my legs trembled. Yet I will wait patiently for the day of calamity to come on the nation invading us. That's crazy. I'm just going to wait. I'm going to sit around and wait to be, like, overtaken. That's kind of like the most anti-American thing I've ever heard. When you think about it. Oh, it's red dawn. The Russians are coming. Get your guns and let's, you know, defend ourselves. That's what we say, right? But Habakkuk is saying, I know that I'm not going to be able to do anything to stop this. So I'm going to wait patiently before the Lord. And I'm just basically going to trust that I'm going to make it through. And so that's kind of a crazy thing for us to, like, think about, because I'm in the same boat. Like, if somebody's going to threaten my home, I'm going to do something about it. But this is not what Habakkuk was called to do in this moment. He was called to sit and wait and be patient and let the Lord have control of the situation. Right? Though the fig tree does not bud and there are no grapes on the vines, though the olive crop fails and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God, my Savior. When Babylon invaded Judah, the only thing Habakkuk could do was pray and wait for God's redemptive mercy. Because the only thing, the only one that could deliver them from the hands of the Babylonians was God. And Habakkuk knew that. He was scared, he was nervous, but he waited patiently. Not only did he wait patiently, but he rejoiced in his waiting. Even though they were out of resources, even though the people he loved and served were suffering, even though it was tough, Habakkuk rejoiced in the Lord. Something amazing that happens when we do this in the midst of our trials and suffering, you know what happens? We get free. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. It doesn't matter what the government's doing. It doesn't matter what the people around us are doing. We can have freedom in the fact that Jesus is the Son of God, that he died for our sins, and that we have eternity with him. That's freedom. It doesn't matter what happens here on this earth. It's what happens after. And when you have eternity with Jesus, you are truly free. You may be at rock bottom, but when you're rejoicing in the Lord, you can be on the mountaintop. And I know that may sound a little cheesy, like, but it's true. It's true. So here's my question. How can you rejoice through your uncertainty? Maybe your marriage is on the rocks. Maybe your kids are a mess. Maybe your financial situation is crazy. Maybe the current political climate just has you completely on edge. Whatever it is. How can you rejoice in the midst of the uncertainty? Number three, the third thing we can learn from Habakkuk is to trust in God's sovereign power. This is verse 19. The sovereign Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer. He enables me to tread on the heights. Have y'all ever seen a mountain goat? They're like big white things that sit on cliffs, and you're like, how in the world did you get up there? Like, I've thought about this this morning, and I didn't put it in my slideshow, but like, there's like a sheer cliff, right, and a little ledge, and there's like no way to get to it, but there's a mountain goat sitting on it, and you're like, how in the world? When I read this verse, I think that that's kind of like what this is talking about. I know deer and mountain goats are not the same, but they're kind of the same. They're similar. They're cousins or something. Mountain goats, they've got the feet that get them up to the place somehow, and they get down and they don't die. Right? The Lord is our strength. He makes our feet like the feet of a deer. He enables us to tread on the heights. He gets us to where we need to go, and he gets us away from what we need to get away from. And he gives us the footing to do it. The key to everything that we've talked about today is recognizing that God is sovereign, meaning that he is all-powerful, that he is all-knowing, that he is all-loving, that he has a plan that's greater than our own understanding, a purpose that supersedes our ability to understand what's going on in our limited view of life. And our view is limited. We don't know everything, even though we do have smartphones that have access to like all the knowledge in the world. We still don't know everything. So even in the darkest times of life, we should not run from God, but to him. Recognize that this season is all a part of his great and perfect majestic plan to restore his people back to himself. He may not cause something to happen, but he might allow us to go through it to draw us closer to him, to deepen our relationship with him. Engage in his loving kindness. Remember his promises from before. Remember his faithfulness in the past and rejoice in the waiting. Trust in his power. A couple years ago, I read this book. It's called Runs with Horses. It's by one of my favorite authors, Eugene Peterson, who wrote the Message version of the Bible, right? Several of us know, Dad quotes that all the time. But he's also written several other books. And this book, he's talking about the life of Jeremiah. And many of the themes are very similar to the themes that we're seeing in Habakkuk. The only difference is that Habakkuk is on the front end of the Babylonian exile. Jeremiah is in the middle of it. So Habakkuk is all about like preparing for the doom of the, you know, the conquering. And Jeremiah is like living through it. And, my computer just messed up. So basically, they've been in the ruling for a while. The exile has been going on for a while. And Jeremiah's job is to help the people of Judah. His job is to communicate God's purposes to them, even in the midst of the exile. And I'd really like to read a passage of this book. And I think, like, if you don't listen to anything else in this message, just listen to this quote. It's kind of a long quote, but it's so good. And basically, it picks up with providing a commentary on Jeremiah writing a letter to the people of Judah. So I'm just going to start reading. Jeremiah's letter is a rebuke and a challenge. Quit sitting around feeling sorry for yourselves. The aim of the person of faith is not to be as comfortable as possible, but to live as deeply and thoroughly as possible, to deal with the reality of life, discover truth, create beauty, act out of love. You didn't do it when you were in Jerusalem. Why don't you try it here in Babylon? Don't listen to the lying prophets who make an irresponsible living by selling you false hopes. How many know we've got to be careful of that today? You are in Babylon for a long time. You better make the most of it. Don't just get along waiting for miraculous intervention. Build houses, plant gardens, marry husbands, marry wives, have children, pray for wholeness of Babylon. And do everything you can to develop wholeness. The only place you have to be human is where you are right now. The only opportunity you will ever have to live by faith is in the circumstances you are provided with this very day. This house you live in, this family you find yourself in, this job you have been given, the weather conditions that prevail at the moment. Kansas weather, everybody, am I right? I've kind of got a scratchy throat. I promise you it's not COVID. It's this going from 5 degrees to 50 degrees every week. Exile forces a decision. Will I focus my attention on what is wrong with the world and feel sorry for myself? Or will I focus my energies on how I can live at my best life in this place I find myself? It is always easier to complain about the problems than to engage in careers of virtue. Daily we face decisions on how we will respond to these exile conditions. We can say, I don't like it. I want to be where I was 10 years ago. How can you expect me to throw myself into what I don't like? That would be sheer hypocrisy. What sense is there in taking risks and tiring myself out among people I don't even like in a place I have no future? Or we can say, I will do my best with what is here. Far more important than the climate of this place, the economics of this place, the neighbors of this place, is the God of this place. God is here with me. What I am experiencing right now is on the ground that was created by him and with people whom he loves. It is just as possible to live out the will of God here as any place else. We lived in Arkansas for a couple of years, so if you haven't caught on yet, I've moved a lot. Texas, Arkansas, Colorado, Kansas. But we were at a kids' camp. We took the kids from our church to kids' camp, and every morning we had a Devo with all the camp counselors and coaches and whatever. And this old-timer preacher from southeastern Arkansas, very rural part of the state, very small town, but the church was like a third of the town. It was like 700 people in a town of like 2,500 or whatever. And he led the devotional at this event, and I don't really remember anything else he said, but this quote really has stuck with me for the last 4 years since I heard it. And he said in his old school deep southern accent, do what you can with what you got, where you're at, and let God do the rest. That means don't wait for something to happen. Do what God's called you to do. Do the things that he's called you to do. Abide in his word. Live by faith. Live truthfully. Don't wait around. Start today. If you're like 19 or 18 or whatever, and you're like, I have no idea what I'm going to do with my life, do something. Don't wait till you're 30 and like waste your 20s. Go out and do something. If you're like 50 and you're like, I don't know what I want to do when I grow up, which I've heard several 50-year-olds in this year say that, do something. Doesn't matter. Just do it. Follow, do what God's called you to do, for sure. But if you don't have anything, do something. Be productive. Don't wait around. Now, I've got some questions on the screen, and I believe there are many people here going through some difficult stuff, some uncertain times. In fact, I know that there are people. I got a text like as church was starting about somebody that's in the ICU with COVID. And so I know that people in our church they're suffering in many ways. And I want to call the worship team up because we'll go into our last song here. But the questions on the screen are this. How can you rejoice in the midst of your uncertain circumstance? How can you find joy? How can you engage with that? You know, and it kind of goes back to you just do it. You choose to do it. Just like Habakkuk, you choose to find joy. Joy and happiness are not the same. Joy is a choice. Choose to rejoice in the Lord. Number two, what is your uncertain situation? some of the things we do have power to control, right? If our finances are a mess, maybe we shouldn't eat out every day, you know? Maybe we shouldn't rack up a credit card debt on things that we don't need, right? You can choose to stop that. But in the other things that you can't control, maybe like a severe illness, or maybe, you know, whatever, release that to the Lord and trust that he's going to work it out. Number three, what are ways God has shown up in the past to give you hope in your present difficult situation? If he can do it then, he can do it again. And if you don't know if he's done something for you in the past, then look to someone else who has. If he can do it for them, he can do it for you. Number four, how can you live your best life in this time of uncertainty? What do you need to do? I can't remember where I saw it or what I, it was on a show I think I was watching like this week, and one of the characters was like, I'm afraid of dying, right? And the other character, I wish I knew the show or what show I was talking about, but the other character was like, what's worse, dying or not living while you're alive? You know, we can be wrapped up in fear like really easily, right? And I think the last 2 years have really maybe exposed that in some people, like, oh wow, I'm really motivated by fear in a lot of different areas. God doesn't call us to live by fear. He calls us to live boldly. He calls us to go where he calls us to go and do what he calls us to do. And sometimes that is not safe. Maybe living your best life is doing what he's called you to do and not being afraid of the uncertain consequences that probably won't even happen, because if he's called you to do it, he's going to get you through it. During this time, you may want to spend some time in prayer. I'll ask the prayer partners to come up to the front. And if you need to pray with somebody, pray with somebody. But don't miss this opportunity to worship and to release some of those things to the Lord. Because we've all got stuff that we try to control that there's no way we can control, but we got to learn to release that. We got to learn to give that over to the Lord. So take this opportunity to do that this morning. God, I thank you so much for this time together, and this time that we can worship and learn about your word. And God, I pray that we would all rest in you. That in the things that we can't control, the things that we can't seem to get a grasp on, God, I pray that we would release those things over to you and trust you with the outcome, whatever it may be. Because we have an understanding that your plans and your ways and your purposes are greater than we could ever understand. God, we praise you and we thank you. In your name I pray. Amen.
This concludes the teaching. Thank you for listening, and we hope you can join us for next Sunday's service with Pastor Steve Raines.